WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, traffic, Justin Ellick, sports, and now.
Talking the news with Noam
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 5 o'clock. Good morning. It is Tuesday, April 9th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center, a mix of sun and clouds today, warmer, high 73. Tonight and overnight, cloudy, low 49. And then Wednesday, the showers roll in, high 58. If you're walking out the door with us right now, it is 51 and partly cloudy in Dobbs Ferry up in Westchester County. 48 and partly cloudy down in Manahawkin, New Jersey. And it's 51 and cloudy here in Midtown. A whole lot to get to as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour. Sid and friends in the morning. I fell asleep watching the NCAA tourney final. March Madness ended. Did you watch this game? If you're up at this hour, chances are you weren't watching. UConn making it back-to-back NCAA men's basketball champions. The Huskies using a pretty big second half to beat Purdue. It was not close in the end, 75-60. This game out in Glendale, Arizona. I mean, it didn't tip off till 10 o'clock. So I think a lot of people on the East Coast probably did not stay up to watch it. Should we hear from the losers? Sure. Here's the Boilermakers coach, Matt Painter.
Our guys really gave good effort and energy defensively in guarding them. And I thought that the real difference ended up being their ability to offensive rebound in the second half. We just were wasting so much energy to fight.
It is the sixth national title for UConn. The Huskies had four players finish with over 10 points. Purdue's Zach Edey, he led all scorers with 37 points, so I guess we can hear from him.
I had never been a part of a championship like this, and that's really what Coach Early and I talked about in the recruiting process. And, you know, this was our goal from day one. So to do it with your brothers and your family that you go to war with every day is just, you know, really special right now.
Yeah, all right. So UConn, your champions. But maybe the bigger story of this entire college basketball season is women's basketball. Because now we're getting numbers in that a lot more people were watching the NCAA women's tourney than were watching the men's tourney. In fact, Sunday's NCAA women's basketball championship game was another record breaker, became the most watched basketball game, men's or women's, college or pro. So, right? So that's men's, women's, college or pro since 2019. That was the final that saw South Carolina defeat Iowa. And of course, the superstar that everybody's tuning in to watch, Caitlin Clark, that drew 18 million viewers on Sunday afternoon on what was a beautiful day, by the way. So it marked the third time in a week that a game featuring Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes broke viewership records. So now the question is, of course, I think she's a senior, so she's graduating. What will it mean for next season? Will it be another player? She broke all scoring records this season. She was the player to watch. But we've never seen numbers like this for a women's basketball tournament. Again, the biggest numbers to watch a basketball game, men's, women's, college, or pro since 2019, which is pretty amazing. All right, can we finish up with the solar eclipse? It's over. Those who are in the path of totality, of course, still talking about what it was like. This man traveling to Texas Hill Country to see it, and he says it was an experience he'll never forget.
You just can't describe how that feels. It just starts to get dark in a matter of seconds, and then for the brief moment where it actually did, the clouds broke enough so we could actually see totality here. The greatest thing I've ever seen. I've never seen anything that cool.
Yeah, you had some people upstate New York. They traveled up there, paid big bucks for a hotel room, and then it was cloudy. Others did get a view.
The few moments where the sun actually did peek through and you could actually see the eclipse, I mean, incredible.
Yeah, it did feel like it was just overwhelming moment, you know, just so much news coverage of it. And then you look to the sky and you're like, oh, okay, it's a solar eclipse. I mean, it was interesting. Don't get me wrong. The Indianapolis Motor Speedway, that place was packed with people watching.
I thought it was awesome. Once in a lifetime experience. Great, great experience for the kids to share.
Yeah. People cheering. Where I live in Jersey City, I'm right next to a park that has a view of the city. And so the place was just packed with people. And there was a woman there. who was there with a whole bunch of people who were doing yoga, timed, I guess, to the solar eclipse. And I should put video up of this. I will. And she was then banging a gong as it got closer to, what was it, 325, when it was 91% coverage, which was the highest it was going to be here in the tri-state. She started banging the gong louder. To me, that was way more entertaining than actually looking at the solar eclipse itself. Captain Kirk, TV's Captain Kirk, he was in at Indiana University yesterday watching it all. I'm talking about, of course, William Shatner. He says, it was a pretty great event.
It's the heavens are breaking. It's ominous sounds. We're all going to die. And now we realize it's not as dire as that, but it's more magical.
Of course, the Star Trek star has been interested in astronomy since his Star Trek days. Of course, then he traveled to the edge of our atmosphere in Bezos's Blue Origin rocket.
Celestial bodies are placing themselves in between other celestial bodies. And at this precise moment, this enormous universe is located right here. For some reason, this eclipse has caught the imagination of the nation. I mean, it's huge when you think about it.
Yeah, they weren't playing a gong there at Indiana University. By the way, Google searches yesterday, what was one of the number one Google searches yesterday was hurt eyes. Now, yesterday when I was doing the show, I did a little bit on the program about how you should wear these specialized, glasses for the eclipse glasses. And I thought, well, this is stupid. Don't people know this? But apparently they did not. Hurt eyes, one of the number one searches on Google yesterday. People saying that they were seeing spots that were not going away. The ophthalmologists, they were weighing in yesterday saying, you might have some irritation for 24 or 48 hours. If it doesn't go away, then that's when it becomes an issue. But they say for most people who were stupid or silly enough to stare at the sun for too long yesterday, at the solar eclipse for too long yesterday, it will go away within 24 to 48 hours. So go figure. Hurt eyes with one of the number one searches on Google yesterday. WABC News Time 5:09. This was coming in overnight. One person killed, another injured in a shooting in Brooklyn. Happened Gaston Boulevard in Brownsville. 50-year-old man shot in the back. He was taken to the hospital where he passed away. A 41-year-old was shot in the shoulder, expected to survive. Police did not detail and do not have a motive for the gunfire, and they have made no arrests. I want to do a follow-up on a story we did yesterday. This 68-year-old woman is in critical condition after becoming a victim in a brutal punching attack that took place on the steps of a church in Queens on Sunday. Now we have more information about this story. Police say the attack happened about 8:30 in the morning Sunday at St. Demetrios Greek Orthodox Church in Jamaica. The woman was followed from behind, and when she reached the top of the stairs, this creep, this jerk, jumped in front of her, knocked her down so hard she went airborne down a flight of stairs outside the church. There is a video of that, and you can see it at WABCradio.com. Here's the priest at that church.
Someone, I guess, was following her and just pushed her all the way to the ground, the floor, with such force. The people that were around, the parishioners that saw it, or afterwards when they were coming, they came out to help because I was in the altar.
I mean, who does that to a senior citizen? This woman's just trying to get into church. There was a service going on inside the church, and so pretty quickly they were able to figure out something was going on outside. But this poor woman shoved to the hard cement down below outside this church.
It was a major feast day for us yesterday, the Feast of the Cross, because we were still in Lent, the Orthodox. Mm-hmm. So she was coming to participate in the worship of the Holy Cross, the veneration. And, you know, she was coming and then this happened.
So apparently it's not even safe going to church anymore. EMS took this woman to Booth Memorial Hospital. Meanwhile, the thief, there's tape of this all, by the way, from the surveillance cameras in the area, able to get away with a cell phone, credit cards, $300 in cash before getting into a Nissan Altima and driving away. The priest at this church, he went to visit the woman in the hospital yesterday. So she apparently was able to communicate.
I visited her yesterday at the hospital. She was alert. She was conscious. I gave her, you know, a blessing, gave her Holy Communion, and gave her a little prayer and an icon. And, you know, we're hopeful, her family is hopeful that she will recover fully.
Yeah, let's hope for the best for her and that they hope to catch up with this creep as soon as possible. No doubt with the video they have, it'll make it a little bit easier. 512, I also want to do a follow-up on another story we did yesterday because now we have more information. We told you about this massive freighter, this container ship that was leaving the Staten Island waterfront when it lost its power, right? Very similar to what happened with that container ship in Baltimore Harbor last month, where it lost power and then, of course, crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge, bringing that bridge down into the river below, killing six construction workers who were on the span. So you can imagine how panicked they were when this container ship over the weekend on Sunday night lost power near the Bayonne Bridge. Thankfully, in this case, the container ships that leave harbors here in New York are followed or next to them are tugboats. And so when this ship lost power, it was right near the Bayonne Bridge. And it was one of these huge container ships. So there was never any worry that it was going to run into the Bayonne Bridge. But, of course, there's a lot of questions. Why are these container ships all of a sudden losing power?
It's a very tight waterway. You have the Bayonne Bridge right there. And right near that point, near the Bayonne Bridge, the ship lost power.
Yes, so apparently the propulsion system was not operational, and they're not really sure what took place, why it happened.
So you had six tugs on this massive ship. A Coast Guard inspection team went on to check it out, and then it departed. Now it's on its way to Norfolk.
Yeah, so pretty quickly you can imagine, especially in light of what happened in Baltimore, they raced to this ship to help out, and they were able to get it back working again, and then it left the harbor, so it's not there anymore. Crews are working to figure out exactly what took place. But here's the question we had that nobody could answer yesterday. How often do freighters lose power, or in this case, propulsion? The fact is apparently the government does not keep any stats or does any investigations about these kinds of incidents. And so we don't know. There's no stats of how often this happens. But here we are twice. The one, of course, in Baltimore, which was deadly. And this one right off of the Bayonne Bridge, which, thank God, was not. Meanwhile, crews are removing cargo containers from the ship that crashed into the Francis Scott Key Bridge last month.
Coast Guard officials say crews are making progress toward removing pieces of the bridge from the ship so they can take the weight off of it and start to move it. Over the weekend, workers removed the first piece of the bridge as the salvage work continues to untangle the wreckage. I'm Lisa Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, good job being done down there in Baltimore that they're going to potentially be able to really sort of get things going again, maybe as early as May. All right, 515, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy Tuesday. Good morning, Justin Ellick.
Happy Tuesday. Good morning to you, Noam Levin. Got to begin here, I should say, in Glendale, Arizona last night for the NCAA Men's Basketball National Championship game between two remaining one seeds in UConn and Purdue. After a first half that saw Purdue's Zach Edey and his 14 points lead the Boilermakers to a lead heading into the locker room, something clicked for UConn in the second half, and the Huskies rallied to beat Purdue 75-60, winning their second straight men's national championship and becoming the first team to go back-to-back since Florida in 2006 and 2007. And after one of the most dominant NCAA tournament runs in history last year, when UConn beat its six opponents by an average of 20 points, it was even more unbeatable this year. The Huskies' average scoring margin in their sixth 2024 NCAA tournament wins was 23.3 points. Essentially, just walking to the title. Nothing to get to out of the NBA, but we've got Knicks basketball to look forward to tonight in Chicago. Tip off there for the Knickerbockers against the Bulls, scheduled for 8 p.m. at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. Juan Soto and Anthony Volpe each hit three-run homers in the fourth inning off Jesus Luzardo, and the Yankees romped over the Miami Marlins 7-0. New York improved to 9-2 and matched the best 11-game start in team history. Nestor Cortez allowed two hits on the bump, but a strong showing for the left-hander, striking out six and walking none. Over eight innings of work, it was his longest outing since May 2022 and the longest by a Yankee starter this year. Since Cortez's 2023 season was cut short by a shoulder injury, this was his first recorded win since May 30th of last year. Game two of three for the Yanks against the Marlins is set for tonight at 7:05 p.m. with the lefty Carlos Rodon ready to take the helm. In Atlanta, DJ Stewart hit a go-ahead two-run homer in the eighth inning. Brandon Nimmo drove in four hits, including two homers. And the Mets held on to beat the Braves 8-7. Mets now have won 4-5 after their underwhelming start to the season, and with the win, snapped Atlanta's three-game winning streak in the process. Right-hander Julio Teheran lasted only 2 2/3 innings, giving up four runs in his Mets debut. The 33-year-old signed with New York last Friday. He began his career, of course, with Atlanta in 2011. He was an all-star with the Braves in 2014 and 2016. 7:20 p.m. is your first pitch for Game 2 in Atlanta tonight, with Adrian Hauser scheduled to make the start for the Mets. No local action on the ice in the NHL last night, but to look forward to, with the Rangers and Islanders set to go head-to-head in Elmont tonight. Puck drop there, scheduled for 7 p.m. The Rangers are tops in the East with 110 points and 4 to play, while the Isles look to hold on to sole possession as a 7 seed with their 85 points and 5 to play. The Devils will be in action as well, dropping a 7 p.m. puck at home against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Jersey's currently on the outside looking in on the playoff picture, sitting 5 points behind the Detroit Red Wings for the second wildcard berth in the East. That is your sports note. And I'm Justin Ellicott, 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 519. Let's go down to Texas. The Republican leadership there wondering whether this will be the week that a federal appeals court rules on the legality of a controversial new immigration law. Governor Abbott eager to let it go into effect.
What Texas is doing is not in conflict with the laws of the United States of America.
So this law allows local police to arrest anybody they believe crossed the border illegally. It's currently blocked thanks to a handful of lawsuits. They argue that only the federal government can enforce immigration law.
There are laws on the books passed by Congress that require the president and the country to deny illegal entry.
Yeah, so we may have a ruling on this as soon as this week. President Biden, he was in Wisconsin yesterday laying out a new plan to forgive student loan debt. He was in Madison announcing a set of actions he said would benefit tens of millions of Americans.
And altogether, my administration is taking the most significant action to provide student debt relief ever in the history of this country.
So among them is forgiving unpaid interest from individuals who now owe more on their loans than originally borrowed. The plan would also forgive some debt for borrowers who have carried their loans for decades. It's the latest attempt by the White House to cancel student debt.
That means no one with undergraduate loans, whether a community college or four-year college, have to pay more than 5% of their discretionary income to repay those loans starting in July.
Now, you'll remember the Supreme Court blocked this plan or something similar to it last year. There potentially could be lawsuits, so no doubt there will be sort of legal action to try to stop this plan as well.
So millions of borrowers who make less than $32,000 a year now after they're out, their monthly student payments will be dropped to zero.
The administration plans to propose the new regulations for public comment in the coming months, and then, of course, expected to face those legal challenges. Former President Trump will not get a change in the venue for his upcoming hush money trial here in the city. The judge did not agree with his lawyer's argument that he cannot get a fair jury here in the city. Trump charged with falsifying business records in an effort to cover up an alleged sexual encounter with porn star Stormy Daniels. Trump is still fighting the judge's gag order. His legal team says the judge is biased, noting that his daughter is an executive at a top Democratic marketing firm that reportedly worked with President Biden. The gag order stops Trump from attacking witnesses and prosecutors and family of the judge. The trial is set to start as soon as next week. Meanwhile, yesterday, the president wading into the abortion debate in a video he put up on Truth Social. He talked about the fact that he believes abortion laws should be left up to the states to decide.
The states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state.
He went on to talk about IVF treatments. He said those would be protected if he makes it back to the White House.
Many people have asked me what my position is on abortion and abortion rights, especially since I was proudly the person responsible for the ending of something that all legal scholars, both sides, wanted and, in fact, demanded be ended, Roe v. Wade. Many states will be different. Many will have a different number of weeks, or some will have more conservative than others, and that's what they will be. At the end of the day, this is all about the will of the people.
Trump's former vice president, Mike Pence, who's no longer a Trump fan, very upset by this news. He, along with Right to Lifers, were hoping that Trump would announce that he would push for a nationwide abortion ban if he makes it back to the White House. 22 Palestinian protesters arrested in California after they stormed the office at Pomona College, the president's office. Gabrielle Starr is the president of the school in Claremont, and she actually confronted these protesters, who then, of course, were rolling videos, so we have all the footage.
If you do not leave within the next 10 minutes, every student in this building is immediately suspended from this institution. If you are from elsewhere, you immediately will be banned from this campus.
Yeah, pretty harsh stuff there from the president. The demonstration began peacefully but devolved after sunset. And they did make arrests. It's not clear if the school will hold to that threat by the president to suspend students from the university for good. A major sports governing body is banning transgender athletes from women's sports competitions now.
The National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics Council of Presidents approved the policy in a unanimous vote Monday. After a survey indicated heavy support for the ban, the association is a national athletic governing body for 249 small colleges across the nation that are part of the NCAA's three divisions. The decision doesn't apply to any NCAA competitions. The NAIA is believed to be the first national college governing body to ban transgender athletes from women's competitions. I'm Lisa Taylor.
WABC News Time 525. Let's go out to the state of Washington. So we haven't heard about this deadly dog virus, thankfully, in a while, but apparently it has popped up in Kings County in Washington State.
We have been seeing such a big fluctuation of parvo positive pets.
Yes, so these dogs, the many of them who go to dog parks, start vomiting, have been immediately taken to the hospital. Don't have any cases where these dogs have died, as they did in a couple cases in California. But, of course, it has pet owners and veterinarians totally freaked out about what they should do if their dog catches this virus.
Bloody diarrhea. If your pet's lethargic, doesn't want to eat, vomiting, then 9 times out of 10, you should probably get your pet checked. If people don't scoop their poop, I know it's law, but it's really to help prevent the spread of any kind of diseases. If another animal smells that poop on a walk, then they can contract it that way.
Yeah, that's a little frightening.
Came from Petrovsky Park, so it's been a really big concern for us.
Yeah, so we'll watch that. Of course, those cases seem to go away in California after a couple dog deaths. Now we're watching what seems to be the same flu out in Washington State. The Empire State Building going to charge teenagers to be able to ask their date out to the prom for $250, a couple, a prom proposal. You know, do you have kids that have done this promposal thing? We didn't have this when we were kids, but where they make a big deal of asking somebody out to the senior prom. So you can do this now at the Empire State Building for $250. A promposal ticket will enable students to use huge prom letters on the 86th floor observatory for a photo op along with complimentary sparkling cider to celebrate their yes. That's assuming that the partner says yes. Once they have their special moment, they can make their way, of course, up to the observatory for the 360-degree view. The building says the event will go through the end of May, and they expect that a ton of seniors from across the tri-state will take them up on it. The opening bell, it rings this morning after stocks close mixed to start the week on Wall Street. A rise in Treasury yields kept many investors on the sideline ahead of key inflation data. Tesla shares, they were up more than 5% on news the company will unveil its new robo-taxi come the summer. At the closing bell, the Dow lost 11 points. S&P 500 fell nearly 2. The Nasdaq rose 5 points. Coming up today and tomorrow, we'll get the latest read on the Consumer Price Index, along with the release of the Fed's March meeting minutes.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
Talking the News with Noam
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 5:33. Good morning. It is Tuesday, April 9th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Mix of sun and clouds today. Just a beauty on the way. Warmer, high 73. Tonight and overnight, cloudy, low 49. And then Wednesday, it's going to be showers, high 58. If you're walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are, 51, partly cloudy in Dobbs Ferry up in Westchester County, 48, partly cloudy in Hawthorne down in New Jersey, and it is 51 and clear outside our Midtown studios. We'll start this half hour down in New Jersey, telling you just how tough it is to be a police officer. No doubt you have a good sense of what that is. But boy, this story out of Galloway Township really hit me about how intense it can be in certain moments for these officers. So in Galloway Township, 911 operators get five or six hangups from a home in their neighborhood. So there's nobody on the line, but just a phone call to 911. Somebody hangs up, happens four or more times. So guess what they do? This is not surprising. They send cops out to this home. So now imagine that you are showing up at a house where potentially nothing's going on, and maybe it's just some kid doing something dopey, but then something really intense might be going on, which is what was the case here. So they show up at this house, two officers in Galloway Township. This is 8:30 at night, and they knock on the door and they say, hey, there's been five hangups, 911 from your house. What's going on? Well, the mother, the mom in this house, just starts to explain what's going on. But seconds later, her teenage son barges out of the house with a knife in hand and stabs one of the officers. Now, they had no idea what they were walking into. And their body cams caught the horrible action. It was really intense. Now, the officer, Eric Tarnow, he was stabbed in the right side of his face with a folding pocket knife during this violent physical altercation. They called in extra cops who raced to the scene to bring this guy in, tackle him, and make sure he didn't do any more damage. Thankfully, this officer is going to be okay.
He had to have some plastic surgery reconstruction. It was a very significant wound. So he was very fortunate that didn't go a little bit lower into his neck. We're very thankful for that.
Yeah, and again, showing up at a spot, they had no idea what was going on. This kid, essentially a teenager, racing out to get them. Clearly some mental health issues.
Just flashing lights everywhere all along the street. Terrified and horrified. And now that I know it's these folks whom I know, this upsets me more.
Yeah, so that was a neighbor. So Officer Tarnow taken to a nearby hospital. He underwent surgery for that significant cut on the side of his face. He was listed in stable condition. The good news is we can tell you is last night or late yesterday afternoon, he was sent home. So he's going to be okay, but he is nursing that wound. And just another example of what police officers have to walk into on a daily basis.
The violence, the action of a suspect, which could happen at any time, just shows how dangerous the job is for officers on a day-to-day basis.
It really is. Now, the teenager who stabbed that officer, he is in custody. WABC News Time 538. Let's go out to Long Island. A driver fleeing police drove off a cliff yesterday in Greenport out on Long Island. Southold Police Chief Martin Flattery says the suspect, who had a warrant out for his arrest, led police on a chase for about 30 minutes from Peconic to Riverhead.
We had aviation up. We had the assistance of Riverhead PD as well. The car then headed back east and at speeds of over 100 miles an hour up on Route 48.
And then you had this, what was essentially a spectacular out of the movies ending. This guy drives through the guardrail, then goes off the side of this cliff. He bounces on the beach below, right outside Long Island Sound.
He drove through the guardrail and ended up off the cliff and bouncing off the beach and into the Long Island Sound.
Now, the amazing part is this guy's still alive. He says officers were able to get to the beach, get him out of the vehicle, and then even place him under arrest. They say he was actually uninjured for the most part after crashing that car off that cliff. Transit crime, once again, the focus yesterday, a violent encounter on an MTA bus in the Bronx. The latest victim stabbed with a screwdriver. He was a 60-year-old man riding a BX-22 bus yesterday afternoon. The bloody scene happened about 2 p.m. on East Fordham Road. This sent passengers running. Now, this is what we're being told. is that the victim was humming gospel songs and tapping the side of his chair as he rode along the bus, and that apparently somebody in front of him had warned him to stop doing that because he found it annoying, and I could understand that. But here's the part where he took it a step too far. The person in front of them was so upset that he continued to sing that he pulled out a screwdriver and stabbed this guy in the head. Well, here's the victim. He actually spoke to WPIX last night.
Yeah, I was humming a church song. Next thing you know, that's when he started attacking me with that screwdriver. A lot of women on the bus, they came and helped me and all like that, and I was grateful for it.
Yeah, you know, if somebody asks you to stop singing, it's probably a good idea to stop doing this, especially since you're on public transit.
He was bleeding like crazy, and he was talking. The people was asking him how old he is because they was calling the ambulance, and he was like conscious of what was happening.
Yeah, now, of course, the question is, why is a guy riding around on the bus with a screwdriver in his pocket?
Would you like to see more police officers on the bus?
Of course. Yes, on the bus, on the trains, everywhere, because it's the people. The people are out of control.
Yeah, so the victim is going to be okay. A guy who used the screwdriver to stab that humming passenger, he's still on loose this morning. Let's go out to New Jersey. New Jersey's first lady sitting down with CBS last night. She was talking about why she stepped out of the race for Senate just sort of all of a sudden last month and what she plans to do next. She says she reluctantly dropped out of the Senate race because she did not want to go negative on a fellow Democrat, Congressman Andy Kim. But isn't that kind of about what running for office is? You got to go negative on your opponent. But she wasn't willing to do it, so that's why she dropped out.
I got into this because people had pleaded with me to get into it. And I am a unifier. I'm not a divider. And at the end of the day, spending money on tearing down a fellow Democrat in a year where Donald Trump is vying to get back in the White House did not feel like a place I wanted to be.
Yeah, I'm unclear what Donald Trump has to do with that, but okay. Murphy did say she decided that it just wasn't right for her. She turned down a bunch of interview requests right after she made her announcements. This is the first time she's talked to the press since deciding to opt out of the race. But she says, maybe she'll run for a different office. But again, she'd probably have to go negative on whoever she's running against.
To be honest with you, I didn't have a plan to seek this office. So just so we're clear, I'm going to keep working on everything I've been working on. I had a very effective hat as First Lady.
543. Let's go up to Connecticut. A teacher in Stamford, Connecticut, arrested after 12 female students reported they were inappropriately touched by him. Police notified by the Department of Children and Family Services that the students at Strawberry Hill Elementary School said they were touched by this teacher, 33-year-old Andrew Park.
Female students that he's had a lot of trust with, those are the main patterns that we've noticed.
Now, if it's true, this sicko is accused of grabbing the backsides of 11 to 13-year-old girls who trusted him. He was arrested and charged on Friday. His family got him out on bail yesterday. He's awaiting trial. Prosecutors say Park was a teacher and the girls' basketball coach. And apparently, this is what they say he did. He would ask the middle school age girls for hugs, sometimes saying that he had candy. And if they gave him a hug, he allegedly then slid his hands down their back and grabbed their backsides. Now, whenever you have a god-awful story like this, part of the problem is getting students to speak out because they're afraid of the whole process. What does it mean if I turn my teacher in? But thankfully, apparently the school handled this very well. The police lieutenant in Stanford said that they were able to get the kids to go on record.
And it's frightening, and a lot of the young kids that deal with it are often fearful for their safety, fearful of the unknown of what the outcome of this is going to look like for them.
Park has taught at the school for 6 years, is married, has a one-year-old child. They were all with him in court yesterday. They believe that he's done nothing wrong. They posted his $175,000 bail. That is, Stanford police continue their investigation. Possibly more kids could come forward.
As alarming as this is, the school district did a tremendous job of, how they reported it, the incidents.
If Park is convicted, he'll likely face prison time and then, of course, be forced to go on a sex offender registry. 545. Let's head over to the 77WABC Sports Desk where we find Justin Ellis.
Thank you, Noam Layden. Beginning here in Glendale, Arizona, last night for the NCAA Men's Basketball National Championship game. between two remaining one seeds in UConn and Purdue. After a first half that saw Purdue's Zach Edey and his 14 points lead the Boilermakers to a lead heading into the locker room, something clicked for UConn in the second half, and the Huskies rallied to beat Purdue 75-60, winning their second straight men's national championship and becoming the first team to go back-to-back since Florida in 2006 and 2007. And after one of the most dominant NCAA tournament runs in history last year, when UConn beat its six opponents by an average of 20 points, it was even more unbeatable this year. The Huskies' average scoring margin in their six 2024 NCAA tournament wins was 23.3 points. Congratulations to the UConn Huskies. Nothing to get to out of the NBA, but we've got Knicks basketball to look forward to tonight in Chicago. Tip-off there for the Knickerbockers against the Bulls, scheduled for 8 p.m. At Yankee Stadium in the Bronx, Juan Soto and Anthony Volpe each hit three-run homers in the fourth inning off Jesus Luzardo, and the Yankees romped over the Miami Marlins 7-0. New York improved to 9-2 and matched the best 11-game start in team history. Nestor Cortez allowed two hits on the bump and a strong showing for the left-hander, striking out six and walking none over eight innings of work. It was his longest outing since May 2022 and the longest by Yankee starter this year. Since Cortez's 2023 season was cut short by a shoulder injury, this was his first recorded win since May 30th of last year. Game 2 of 3 for the Yanks against the Marlins set for tonight at 7.05 p.m. with the lefty Carlos Rodon set to take the hill. In Atlanta, DJ Stewart hit a go-ahead two-run homer in the eighth inning. Brandon Nimmo drove in five runs with four hits, including two dingers, and the Mets held on to beat the Braves 8-7. They now have won 4 of 5 after their underwhelming start to the season, and with the win, snapped Atlanta's three-game winning streak in the process. Right-hander Julio Teheran lasted only 2 2/3 innings, giving up four runs in his Mets debut. The 33-year-old signed with New York last Friday. He began his career with Atlanta in 2011. He was an all-star with the Braves in 2014 and 2016. 7:20 p.m. is your first pitch for Game 2 in Atlanta tonight, with Adrian Hauser scheduled to make the start for the Mets. No local action on the ice in the NHL last night, but a lot to look forward to with the Rangers and Islanders set to go head-to-head in Elmont tonight. Puck drop there is scheduled for 7 p.m. The Rangers are tops in the East with 110 points and 4 to play, while the Isles look to hold on to sole possession of the 7th seed with their 85 points and 5 to play. The Devils will be in action as well, dropping a 7 p.m. puck at home against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Jerseys currently on the outside looking in on the playoff picture, sitting 5 points behind the Detroit Red Wings for the second wildcard berth out of the East. That's your sports. You know, no. Yes. What?
Before you leave.
Yes. What?
I was probably going to should talk to you about this off the air, but
I guess.
But now that I brought it up, I'll bring it on the air.
All right.
So I got emails yesterday from three people, which is a lot, I think. They were very upset that you didn't include the fact that it was WrestleMania on Sunday night and that Cody Rhodes, I guess, is the new world
champion.
That's
not sports. That's entertainment.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Is that a good enough answer for you?
Sure. I'm going to type that back to them right
it's
now.
It's just not sports. That's entertainment. That's strictly, I mean, that's just not.
All right. Well, they thought it should have been part of
sports. Well, sports aren't pre-planned, rehearsed, and don't have a script.
Oh, so Cody Rhodes knew all along that he was going to be the
champion
on Sunday night.
Of course he did. What do you mean? He knew the storyline. Of course he knew he was going to be the champion.
I always thought it was real.
So. No.
It's not.
No,
okay.
No. Oh, I do sports, not entertainment. Okay. Thank you. Sure. Back to you.
All right, let's catch up on some of the big stories we've been following. Of course, the solar eclipse. That's history now. Everybody talking about what they saw. Now, here we had, 91% coverage? It, for a lot of people, was kind of underwhelming. For people who were in totality, essentially darkness in some places, they say it was pretty cool. This guy was in Texas.
You just can't describe how that feels. It just starts to get dark in a matter of seconds. And then for the brief moment where it actually did, the clouds broke enough so we could actually see totality here. The greatest thing I've ever seen. I've never seen anything that cool.
All right.
The few moments where the sun actually did peek through and you could actually see the eclipse, I mean, incredible.
Lots of people packing the Indianapolis Motor Speedway so they could have a communal moment while watching it together.
I thought it was awesome. Once-in-a-lifetime experience. Great, great experience for the kids to share.
In fact, when it was totality, they cheered. Apparently, everybody wanted William Shatner at their event. It was the University of Indiana who got him to watch the eclipse with them.
It's the heavens are breaking. It's ominous sounds. We're all going to die. And now we realize it's not as dire as that, but it's more magical.
Yeah, so the Star Trek star has been interested in astronomy going back to his Star Trek days. In fact, you'll remember he got to travel to the edge of our atmosphere in Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin ship. He said that was cool, but he says this was pretty cool too.
Celestial bodies are placing themselves in between other celestial bodies. And at this precise moment, this enormous universe is located right here. For some reason, this eclipse has caught the imagination of the nation. I mean, it's huge when you think about it.
Yeah, and maybe the more entertaining part of this entire eclipse thing yesterday is one of the number one searches yesterday on Google was hurt eyes. So with all the warnings that were out there to use the approved sunglasses, hurt eyes was the number one or one of the number one searches on Google in the U.S. yesterday. Here in the city, we have more information on this brutal beating of a 68-year-old woman outside of a church in Queens. This was at St. Demetrios Greek Orthodox Church on Sunday. This poor woman shows up for services 8:30 in the morning. This creep follows her up the stairs. She's about to walk in. He grabs her, throws her off the stairs onto the concrete below.
Someone, I guess, was following her and just pushed her all the way to the ground, the floor. With such force. The people that were around, the parishioners that saw it, or afterwards when they were coming, they came out to help because I was in the altar.
That's the head priest of the church. There was a service going on inside, thankfully, so they were able to come out and help this woman who's in critical but stable condition this morning.
It was a major feast day for us yesterday, the Feast of the Cross, because we were still in Lent, the Orthodox. Mm-hmm. So she was coming to participate in the worship of the Holy Cross, the veneration. And, you know, she was coming and then this happened.
Yeah, so this creep, this jerk, this thief made off with the woman's cell phone, credit cards, about $300 in cash. He drove off in a Nissan Altima and now police are still looking for her.
I visited her yesterday at the hospital. She was alert. She was conscious. I gave her, you know, a blessing, gave her Holy Communion and gave her a little prayer and an icon. And, you know, we're hopeful, her family is hopeful that she will recover fully.
Yeah, and you can see video of this guy. You can head over to WABCradio.com. The holiday of Eid begins tomorrow. And some anti-war protesters in Paterson, which is home to one of the largest Palestinian communities outside the Middle East, have a different kind of protest this year. They say they're not going to celebrate Eid if it can't be celebrated in Gaza.
She was always happy and had a loving personality.
She was killed while having dinner.
Baby Heba starved to death due to a lack of formula in North Gaza.
May she rest in paradise.
These are all people who live in Paterson who've lost loved ones back in Gaza.
I have lost some of my uncles. I have lost an aunt with her four kids. I don't know if even my husband is going to make it or not.
We have families here in New Jersey, American citizen families in New Jersey, who have lost more than 3,000 families in Gaza. This is very personal. It's something that we all relate to because we all know somebody who has died in Gaza over the past 6 months.
International pressure has been mounting to have Israel let more aid in, and in fact, more aid trucks were allowed into Gaza on Monday than any other day since the October 7th attacks. That was the day that the Hamas massacred more than 1,300 Israeli citizens near the Gaza border. Still, Israel says the war against Hamas will continue. There was a thought when they pulled back troops over the last 48 hours that maybe it was the beginning of the end of the war, but the lawmakers across the board in Israel saying, you know, no, this is not the end of the war. Out to East New York, where there is an apartment complex there that is a new affordable housing building where it's become, of course, so unaffordable to live in the city. So you can imagine when they have a lottery for people who can get into these apartments, the line is incredibly long to get one of these apartments. A one-bedroom apartment in this East New York building will be $617 a month, which if you live in New York City or in anywhere nearby, you know that's an incredible bargain. The building was created by the Supportive Housing Loan Program, which focuses on permanent affordable housing to serve the needs of disadvantaged New Yorkers. Now, you might be surprised what the annual income has to be to get one of these apartments. It starts at $24,000, but you can make as much as $105,000 and still get in on what, again, essentially, again, is a lottery. They're going to pick numbers, and whoever gets those numbers will get these apartments for $617 a month.
They're, like, you know, helping out the people, and especially with, like, you know, people are struggling, getting jobs, everything's, you know, a mess. So it's really nice that they're trying to help.
Yeah, so that lottery is open until April 16th.